It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our guest tells us how to have more meaningful, mutually beneficial communication with the animals in our lives.
Our next guest says it's time to understand what deep, effective communication with animals really looks like, and it may not be what you think, our typical idea of training enforced with a whole lot of words.
John Katz has spent his life working to understand animals, from his border collie Rose to his rooster, Winston, and his menagerie of donkeys, goats, steers, and lambs. He currently writes about animals and works with them to help survivors of PTSD cope with trauma.
John Katz joins us now. He's the author of the new book, Talking to Animals, How You Can Understand Animals and They Can Understand You. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Well, you say that in many cases, standard methods of training, you say, diminish animals, treating them as spiritless, stupid, and clueless beings. Can you talk more about what you mean by that, what we might get wrong about standard training?
Well, you know, I think it's time to have a wiser and perhaps more mystical understanding of animals than we do. We tend to see them through a series of narrow prisms. You know, they're dependent creatures, they're babies, they're children. You know, they're abused, they're piteous, they're to be rescued. I think it's a mistake to project all of our emotions and feelings onto them and sometimes fail to understand them as they really are. You know, they're simpler creatures. They don't have our words. They don't have our language. They don't have our emotions. And I think we're projecting so much of our feelings onto them that we're failing to learn how to listen to them or even how to really communicate with them in a way they can understand.
Right, and your book isn't really, it's not really about training animals. You're talking about actually communicating with animals and in a way that's a two-way street. What do you see as the difference there?
Well, I think the inspiration for me to do this was I was writing about the New York carriage horse controversy, and I realized that all the people talking about the horses and talking about how abused and mistreated they were didn't really understand anything about horses, didn't know how to interpret them, didn't know how to interpret their behavior, didn't know how to listen to them. So that's what really triggered me to write a book like this. I developed over these last 15 or 20 years a number of tools and techniques for talking to them in a different way. One of them is of course, the use of food as a way of opening up lines of trust. Another is understanding that animals can sense our emotions, can smell them, can see them using their instincts. I think another way is what I call visualization, which is not a voodoo sort of mystical thing, but it's simply a matter of being clear on what your intent is, what you want to happen, and understanding that animals have the instincts to pick that up. You know, dogs are believed to communicate with each other in much the same way autistic children do. They communicate in images and emotions, not in words and narratives. You know, we fail to understand that animals like dogs, you know, they don't have words, they don't have narratives, they don't have vocabulary, and they don't get jealous as everybody thinks they do. They don't grieve in the way that human beings grieve because they don't even know what death is. And this is a wall, this way of anthropomorphizing and projecting is a wall because it keeps us from actually understanding what they are, which is very, you know, simpler creatures than we are, who are really thinking about surviving and eating and existing.
And you tell a story to get at some of those tools that you just walked us through. You tell us a very moving story about, I think it's your dog, Red, and the two of you are going for a walk through a cemetery, and along the way you come across a grieving family. Could you tell us what happened next?
Well, this was a case, I believe, where Red approached a child and people my initial thought was to keep him away from them. And you know, I didn't want to bother them. They were having a very private moment. But I could sense a very clear feeling from him, a signal from him, really, and from them, that he was saying to me, I want to talk to them. I know what I'm doing. And it wasn't that I heard him in words, but I could just see by his demeanor that he was confident about it, that he, you know, he's a therapy dog, and he knew what he was doing. So I let him go. And they desperately wanted to see him. They desperately wanted to talk to him. They put their arms around him. They were talking to him. They were crying with him. And that was a case where I think I put aside my own idea about what a dog should be doing. And, it, you know, I was a little uncomfortable because I thought, my God, if I'm wrong, I'm really going to interrupt people at a private moment. But I knew him, and I trusted him, and I got a very clear message from him. And it was actually a very beautiful thing to do, and the family thanked me repeatedly for it.
How can we do that with our dogs? How can we understand them at that level? I mean, you were thinking, your first impulse was, no, this family is mourning, people are sobbing, my dog shouldn't come in and interrupt. But you thought, no, this dog has a different sense. How do we get to that place with our own dogs and other pets?
I think step one is really understanding that they don't have our words. They don't think in words. They don't have our vocabulary. And most of the time, they don't know what we're talking about. The way animals read us is through understanding our emotions, what we're feeling, through looking at our body language. They can smell our emotions. They can see our emotions. They can see by the way we move, what mood we're in. You know, and talking to them in feelings rather than words is imperative. It's a hard thing to do. You know, the great trainers, you know, the good old people have been doing it with animals in the wild for years. It's not a new idea. But I have purging yourself of that idea. You know, every time a person comes up to my dogs, they tell me that their dogs are going to be jealous. Jealousy is not a dog emotion. Dogs don't do the silly stuff that humans do. They don't do that. And so that's something we're putting on them that's wrong. And people have all these stories about grieving and how dogs grieve and pine away because we need to see them that way. But the truth is, dogs don't have any idea what death is, and they don't have a vocabulary for it. So they may be uneasy or uncomfortable or frightened, but they don't grieve in human terms. The other thing that is so important in it, it's very tricky to describe to people, is what I call visualization, what I call deciding what your intent is, clearing your head of all the stuff and distractions, and projecting what it is you want the dog to do. What do you want to happen? Do you want the dog to walk with you? Do you want the dog to stay away from the street? Do you want the dog not to jump on people? Do you want the dog to be calm? Dogs can pick up this stuff because they're looking at you, they're looking at your body, they're looking at your eyes, they're smelling you. So they're not looking necessarily for words, although they can be important too. They're looking at you for what your intention is, what is it you want from them. And I've had amazing experiences dealing with dogs in this way, getting them not to go in the street, getting them not to be too excited, getting them to be still when I wanted them to be still. When I go into my study to write, my dogs don't move. I don't even know I have dogs because I'm projecting this need for them to be still. I've done this with a cow. I've done this with sheep giving birth. So I know it can be done. You know, I'm living on a farm with these animals, and I'm aware of it. And I'm doing a lot of therapy work with hospice groups and assisted care facilities with my border collie, Rin. But it definitely calls upon us to look at animals differently, not only through the prism of being abused, not only through the prism of being emotionalized and being our babies and our children. You know, it's imperative that we do this because people are misunderstanding animals like horses or even elephants and even dogs. You know, draft horses need to work. They need jobs. They've never been in the wild. They couldn't last 5 minutes there. They were bred to work in cities and pull things. If they don't do it, they disintegrate.
We're speaking with John Katz right now, and we're going to continue our conversation with him in just a little bit, talking about his new book, Talking to Animals, How You Can Understand Animals and They Can Understand You.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How do you communicate with the animals in your life? Does the connection you have get better when your communication does? Do you have a story to share or a question to ask about how to do this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we're continuing our conversation now with John Katz, talking about his new book, Talking to Animals, How You Can Understand Animals and They Can Understand You. John has spent a life among animals, learning from animals, learning how to communicate with animals, and he works with them in a therapy capacity as well. And we're learning more.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you can communicate with the animals in your life? Do you have questions about how to do this? It's not in the words. It's in the emotions and the feelings, he says. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And John, you also said it's in the visualization, and your book opens with a story of you walking through the woods with another dog. This dog is named Rose, and something happens. All of a sudden, you're confronted by a small pack of coyotes, and you somehow manage to communicate to Rose what you would like her to do. Can you tell us about that moment?
Yes, and I want to say I love the idea of dogs supporting giving money to public radio. Mine do, and it works, and I give all the time. Try it. Just try it. It's a great idea.
Excellent. Yes. I love it.
Rose was a border collie who came when I first got my farm in upstate New York. And we were walking out in the woods one night, and I looked ahead and saw her freeze. And I saw these three pairs of red eyes ahead of me. And they were coyotes who were just standing in the path down a ways ahead of us. And this was a young border collie, very tough with the sheep, but very confident and very fearless. She did not back down. And she kind of rushed up ahead to face them with her fur up, which was kind of a horrifying thing for me, since she's, you know, they're not really fighters, and I didn't imagine her surviving that. So I started yelling at her, and she was paying no attention to me. And so I think it's the first time I instinctively use what I call visualization, which is really a matter of what it is, what is your intent, what do you want to happen? And I stopped and was very calm instead. And I just pictured her stopping where she was and not moving ahead. And that's what she did. She just stopped and was staring them down until I could come up with them, and with a stick in my hands, and they, and then she turned and came back to me. And it was the first time I saw a really clear idea of communicating in that way, which is essentially how dogs communicate with one another. I mean, they don't have words, and they don't talk to each other. They communicate through body language and movement and the sharing of images, much like autistic children do. And she very clearly was getting a message from me, and she very clearly responded to it. And it was, I think, a way she had of hearing it, where in that situation, by making noise, didn't affect her. And also it was my trusting that I could project clarity about that and intent to her. So I don't want to overdo that. You know, it's not voodoo. It's really very simple common sense, and anybody can do it. The problem I have with conventional training is they make people feel stupid. You know, you sell these $30 books for hundreds of pages about doing things that you can't do and the dogs don't respond to, so you quit. You give up on it. When the best communicating comes from inside of you. You know, dogs meet us in a million ways. They follow the way we move. They follow the way we talk. They smell our emotions. They look at our body language. They know our voices. It's very simple to communicate with them in a purer way. And the value of it, you know, half the animal species in the world have disappeared since 1970. So it's really imperative that people understand what it is that not only dogs, but animals like horses and elephants really want and really need, what makes them content and healthy. And at this rate, we're not going to have any domesticated animals in the world if we don't do that. We can't just remove them from people. So the new and wiser way of understanding them is seeing them as partners in the world and taking, having the discipline and taking the time to recognize how different they are and how it is they really talk with one another. Because we can do that.
And John, it's a great place to leave it. I wish we had more time. I really enjoyed spending some time with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
That was John Katz. He's the author of numerous fiction and nonfiction books about animals, lives with lots of them, including roosters and steers and lambs and lots of dogs. We're talking about his latest book. It's called Talking to Animals, How You Can Understand Animals and They Can Understand You.
And John, you heard it there. His dogs are big supporters of public radio. I hope yours are too. Make a pledge the name of your dog or cat or horse or whatever, what other animal you live with or takes care of you. Make that contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Food carts have been steadily making their way to more streets every year, especially in the state's larger cities. But with so many options to choose from, deciding on which cart to pick can sometimes come down to which cart looks the coolest.
And that's where our next guest comes in. Josh Rollmaker joins us now. He's the owner of Caged Crow Fabrication, a custom food cart and food truck maker based in St. Germain. His carts can be seen not just in Wisconsin, but all over the country. We've got a link to an Isthmus article featuring his work with some pictures. Josh, welcome to Central Time.
You betcha.
Well, this is a unique product to make, a unique line of work. How did you get into making food carts and food trucks?
Well, it really wasn't planned. It just kind of happened by accident. I owned a welding and metal fabrication shop in Madison, and I had a lady come in one afternoon, asked if I could build her a small food concession trailer. Her old one was rusted out and pretty rough shape, and we took on the challenge and we built it, and knew nothing about the food truck industry, and just read a lot, and ended up getting featured in a couple small magazines, USA Today article, and the phone just started ringing. That's kind of how it happened.
You did one, and the rest just started pouring in.
Yeah, basically.
Now, what is unique? You did some research before you made the first one. What is it that sets apart doing something like this from all the other stuff you might have done?
Well, it's a lot different. You know, these are commercial kitchens on wheels versus before. You know, we were mostly doing welding repair and gates and furniture and, you know, a little bit of everything. But food trucks, I mean, they got to be up to commercial code and, you know, just a lot of plumbing and gas knowledge and electrical. So we really had to learn all that.
And then you took the business, do I have this right, you took it up to St. Germain?
Yeah, we actually had a house fire, my family and I, my wife and two kids. And so we always wanted to move up north. We had a family cabin up here, and the kids are little, and we said, you know what, we've always wanted to move north. Let's do it now before it's too late. And so the fire was kind of a blessing in a way. You know, we got to move up here, and it's great. And the food truck scene, you know, it's nationwide. You know, we don't do a lot of local ones, so it doesn't really matter where we live.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You're really fueling this national. I mean, you go to cities around the country, there's more and more of these food trucks. You're really part of this national trend.
Yes, we are. You know, and what sets us apart from the other food truck builders out there is that a lot of the other food concession trailers and food trucks that you see on the streets today are old converted UPS trucks or bread trucks or FedEx trucks, so on. And or they're just a standard enclosed box trailer with some graphics on the side of it. Everything we do is from the frame up. And I guess you could say we specialize in themed carts. You know, if somebody wants it to look like a pirate ship, let's say, with a kitchen inside, you know, we'll build it. So everything we do is different from the next one. We've never built the same trailer twice. And we've gotten to be kind of known as the go-to shop for anything unique.
Right. And was that important to you going into this? You didn't want to have, you know, an assembly line cookie cutter approach. It was important to you that each one is its own thing?
Oh, definitely. You know, we have a saying around here at the shop and a sign on the wall, actually. It's quality over quantity. That's one thing I told myself in the beginning. I was not going to do what everybody else was doing. I wasn't interested in production, and I got a custom background, and that's what we want to stick with.
And so how many of these are you making in any given, I don't know, year?
Right now, it's about one every 6 weeks.
Okay.
So it's definitely picking up. We've been at this since early 2014. It was kind of slow in the beginning. We're trying to get known and build our portfolio. But the last 6-8 months, I would say, we've gotten a lot more attention through social media, and our phone's been ringing a lot more.
And you've said we a couple times, and I understand this is, you're not a one-man shop, but it's kind of a family operation.
Yeah, it's my wife and I, and my brother's part-time. He's a retired veteran, and so he's with me part-time, and I have one full-time employee in Jeremiah. So it's pretty much just the three of us, and small crew and big builds, basically.
We're talking to Josh Rollmaker with Caged Crow Fabrication about making food carts and food trucks. Josh, tell us about a couple of the most unique designs that people have come in with that you've made.
I would say, well, several. Right now we're converting a 1972 Winnebago into a mobile boutique. It's going to be a retail store. And we're also converting a 1982 International school bus into a hot rod-themed commercial kitchen and dining area.
Oh, wow. So you don't just order from this thing. You actually get on and order and eat on the bus?
Yeah, it's going to be the business name is actually the International Fine Dining. He's going to be doing private events, catering, and hosting, like, corporate dinners. It'll seat 4 to 6 people comfortably, and then plus a full kitchen.
Wow. Have people ever come up with a design that's just like, it's too far out there, it's not, from an engineering standpoint, possible?
Well, there's a will, there's a way. I've never said no to a job. You know, I had one lady come in with an everyday catering van, just a standard van that you see every contractor out there having. And she does catering, and she wanted to see if I can make her whole roof of the van retractable to lift up and down so she could serve out of her van standing up. And she couldn't find a shop in the entire state to do it. And I said yes within 5 minutes, and it turned out great. We made the whole roof of the van lift up and down on shocks. You can lift it up and down with one finger.
Now, this has got to be a challenge, but it sounds like for you it's probably a lot of fun coming in with this problem and solving it.
Yeah, you know, it can be stressful, you know, it at times, but yes, it is fun. You know, it's, you're constantly learning. This business is nothing but problem solving, and you're building a full kitchen to roll down the road, you know, and in a standard commercial kitchen at a restaurant, everything's just stationary. You don't have to bolt equipment down or all of that mess. So you're constantly thinking of clever ways how to make things safer and better. And each one that we build, we learn more and more.
I didn't even think of that. I just think of it in use when it's stationary, but you've got to make it so that, you know, the spatula holders and all the gear and the pots and pans aren't just bouncing around while you're on the road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these have 3-4 sinks in them, plumbing, water heaters, waste and freshwater tanks. It's a lot, you know, and plumbing pipe is not really meant to bounce around. So we're always coming up with ways to make things tight and secure. And the last thing you want is a $4,000 stove rolling across the trailer while you're driving. And so, yeah, it's got its challenges, but it's also fun.
You mentioned that local business wouldn't keep you in business. So how far and wide are your trucks and carts right now?
We really started in Madison. You know, we have, I think, 10 or 11 food carts downtown Madison that we've built. And so if it wasn't for Madison food cart scene, we wouldn't be here today. That's really what gave us our start. And because of those, we started reaching out further. But right now we're getting calls east, west coast, Canada. We've gotten some out-of-country inquiries. So there's, you know, if the customer's willing to pay for shipping, we'll send one anywhere.
So I was in Washington, D.C. not too long ago, and on the National Mall, they have a ton of food trucks, but they were kind of the cookie-cutter things that you were talking about. Do you have any of your own trucks or carts on the National Mall or other interesting places around the country?
Well, we've converted a shipping container. We took a 20-foot shipping container and turned it into a food truck. We built a custom trailer frame for it, wheels, and that's out in Salt Lake City. That's been getting a lot of attention. The school bus, we're about 2 or 3 weeks away from finishing up this. This is probably going to turn a lot of heads. That's our biggest thing here. You know, like you said, you're in Portland or wherever. You go down to the food truck scene, there'll be a whole street just lined with food trucks. And the only thing that separates it from the next one is the graphics or the stickers on the side of it. You know, and, you know, I kind of sometimes joke around and call that cake decorating. You know, anybody can put stickers on a truck. And everything we do, again, is from the frame up. We really want, I tell customers all the time, it's the food truck that brings them in. It's the food that brings them back.
Let's talk about the food now, Josh. How many of the trucks and carts you've sold have you actually gotten to sample the food from?
Probably, honestly, only one or two.
Oh, no.
Yeah. My wife and I talk sometimes about if we could ever be fortunate enough to do a mini food tour of the carts we've built, you know, maybe travel to a couple cities and explore the food truck scene while we're out there, you know, do a little research and try out some of these food carts that we've built.
And now, are you cooks there at the company? Are any of you cooks, or are you just figuring out what other people need?
No, not really. You know, your basic household cooking, really. You know, I can cook on the grill pretty well, and my wife, she's good. But none of us are chefs, no.
And I got to ask, Caged Crow, where does that name come from?
It's kind of a unique name, yeah, I know. When I was a kid, I really liked crows. You know, they're very smart. They're one of the smartest birds. And growing up in the country on a farm, you know, there'd be crows around a lot. And I don't know, we were just dreaming up names one day, and we wanted something unique. And my wife and I both love crows. I got a crow tattoo. And that's kind of how we came up with the name. You know, caged is kind of mean, and you know, we were a welding shop in the beginning, and
sure.
we just kept the name. So.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you so much for spending the time with us, and good luck with the business.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's Josh Rowmaker. He's the owner of Caged Crow Fabrication, a food cart maker based in St. Germain, Wisconsin.